It is good to be in church. It is good to be in church. Can I hear you guys say that? It is good to be in church. Let's turn to the person next to you and say, it is good to be in church. Good. Turn to somebody else and say, it is good to be in church. Let's hear the gentleman say, gentlemen, please.
It is good to be in church.
Women, I was at a march yesterday. It was pretty loud. Let's hear you guys say it. Oh, that much better than the 9 o'clock, folks. That was good. It is good to be in church. As Rick said, I am Reverend Hank Peirce. I am your stewardess for the next 10 weeks. And it is good to be in church. It's good for me to be here with all of you over the next 10 weeks. And I look forward to it. At this point, at this point, I'm going to sit down. Thank you. Thanks. At this point, I'm still new. Thank you very much. Jolene's coming forward to light our chalice. May the light we now kindle inspire us to use our powers to heal and not to harm, to help and not to hinder, to bless and not to curse, to serve thee in the spirit of freedom. Will you please join me in singing our very first hymn in your silver and gray hymnals? It's hymn number one. We're going to be singing through the whole hymnal these 10 weeks. So, hymn number one, please rise as you are able. May nothing evil cross this door.
May nothing evil cross this door.
please remain standing and join me in saying the covenant, which is printed in your order of service? Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Let's open our hearts in prayer. God of ages and our God, out of a troubled world of advantage and self-serving strife, we come to this place set apart for the renewal of vision. Here in this place, this religious home, we assemble to acknowledge our human condition and to offer, as others have done before us, the hand of fellowship to those who seek assistance. And we offer our voices to those whose voices are not heard. We are grateful for all those who traveled so far to make their voices known. We are grateful for the millions across America and others around the world who marched to remind all of us the importance of women in our world and in our lives. Thou, we pray this Sunday for clarity. Clarity for us, for our nation and the world. Embrace us as your daughters and sons. Make yourself known to us and make yourself known and embrace our new president, Donald Trump. We do not scorn him. We may scorn his words and his actions, but we are his brothers and his sisters as he is a child of creation and a child of yours. And God, may we be clear in our values these next years, speaking out when needed, marching when needed, protesting when needed. We hold in our prayers and in our hearts Gail Thomas after the death of her mother, and Noli and Kay as they travel to India to scatter their daughter's ashes. God of all the prophets, known and unknown and those yet to be, we ask again your blessings upon us. And may all the joys and sorrows and milestones shared, along with all those left unspoken, be cradled in the silent sanctuaries of our hearts. Amen. Let us be in silence for a moment. Half of the loose collection this month is going to the Concord Prison Outreach. And you can read more about that in the order of service. We are grateful that we gather together as an inclusive religious community. We are grateful that we gather together in this welcoming place. We are grateful that we share our resources to make this possible. The offering will now be given and joyfully received.
Freedom come, freedom come, freedom come.
Our reading this morning comes from the Reverend Dick Gilbert, who was the minister emeritus of the First Unitarian Church in Rochester, New York. I arise in the morning torn between the desire to save the world or savor it, to serve life or to enjoy it, to savor the world or savor it. The question beats in upon the waiting moment, to savor the sweet taste of my own joy or to share the bitter cup of my neighbor, to celebrate life with an exuberant step, or to struggle for the life of the heavy laden. What am I to do? When the guilt at my bounty clouds the skies of my vision, when the glow which lights my every day illumines the hurting world around me, to savor the world or save it. God of justice, if such there be, take from me the burden of my question. Let me praise my plenitude without limit. Let me cast from my eyes all troubled folk. No, you won't let me be. You will not stop my ears to the cries of the hurt and the hungry. You will not close my eyes to the sight of the afflicted. No, you will not. What is that you say? To savor, one must serve. To savor, one must save. The one will not stand without the other. Forgive me. In my preoccupation with self, in my concern for my own life, I had forgotten. Forgive me, God of justice. Forgive me and make me whole. Will you now please rise and join in singing our second hymn? It's number 318 in your hymnals, We Would Be One, 318. Please rise.
which binds our hearts and points us on our way. As one we pledge ourselves to greater service, with love and justice strive to make us free.
Thank you, and please be seated. There are not many Jews in Norway, about 1,500 at most. So when my pal Jeremy was sent to Oslo for work, he wasn't expecting very much in the way of Jewish life. However, he's a very gregarious guy, and he soon found his way into fellowship of a man who had been excluded from the traditional conservative synagogues because he was gay. This gay Norwegian Jew, which is... I don't have the opportunity to say that a lot. So this gay Norwegian Jew who had been excluded decided to start his own group. He named it the Society for Progressive Judaism in Norway. He arranged monthly Shabbat potlucks and weekly Torah studies. And soon my friend Jeremy was invited to one of these gatherings. After the meal, the host announced it was time to study. And the passage they were to study that night was from the book of Genesis, a passage which in the West is called the Call of Abram. In Hebrew, it's known as the Lech Lecha. It goes as this. The Lord said to Abram, "Go from your country, your people, and your father's household to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you." Now, at that point, it seemed it was going to be a pretty straightforward discussion on land and the idea of Israel, but they didn't stop there. You see, in Judaism, you don't just have the Torah. You don't just have the sacred script. You also have the Talmud. The Talmud is this record of rabbinic discussions pertaining to Jewish law and ethics and customs and societies, and it stretches back centuries. And it also explains discrepancies in the text. If you've read either the Christian scriptures or the Hebrew scriptures, you know there are times in the text when you kind of go, "What? That makes no sense at all." And so one of the ways that the Talmud fixes this or tries to answer some of these questions is with stories or midrashes, they call them. The sort of a classic example is that is the discussion in the scriptures you find about the how humanity came about. You read, it says God created men and women, but then two chapters later, it has this whole thing about, you know, Adam and Eve and the rib and all that sort of stuff. And people for centuries have asked, how does that work? Like, you had a man and woman, and then later on there's another man and woman. And so what the rabbis came up with was the story of Lilith, right? So God created man and woman, Adam and Lilith. But Lilith didn't do what Adam wanted her to do. She was wearing a pink knit cap and marching with signs. And Adam went to God and went, "Please, please save me from this woman." And so God sends Lilith out of Eden and then creates Eve, who is more subservient. As the story, I know. Let me just say, maybe when Tom comes back, he can preach a whole sermon about Lilith. All right, let me just say that right now. But you're not going to get that right now. Anyway. In truth, the reason why there are these two stories is because there were two oral traditions, one from the north and one from the south, and when they started writing them down, they were trying to figure out, like, all right, whose story should we keep? And I'm sure they said, like, put them both in, and later editors will figure it out. Anyway, you get the idea of how the Talmud is used. So after reading this passage about Abram's call, they get out their copy of the Talmud and pick out the passage for the lek leka. That's what it means. It means go, or it's more like get thee out. But you know, it's that. And this is what they read. They read, so after this passage about God telling Abram to go and leave your parents and your land, and I'll give you a new land, they read this. This may be compared to a man who is traveling from place to place when he sees a building in flames. And he wonders, is it possible that this building lacks someone to look after it? At that moment, the owner of the building looked out and said, I'm the owner of the building. At this point, my friend Jeremy told me that they went, could you read that again? Because that doesn't make any sense with the story, the passage from the Bible. And they read it again. And he said that the rest of the discussion that night was a discussion about, our faith can be kind of strange, can't it? And they never quite figured out why this story about a house being on fire was linked with this the story of Abraham going out. Time goes by. Jeremy finishes his work in Oslo, comes back to Boston, and the first chance he meets up with his rabbi, and he's telling him about his trip, and he said, so we had this night when we were reading, and we read this passage from the Talmud about a house being on fire, and the rabbi goes, And the rabbi goes to his library and pulls down his copy of the Talmud, and he reads it. He goes, here we go. This may be compared to a man who was traveling from place to place when he saw a mansion aglow. Is it possible that this building lacks a person to look after it? The man wondered. At that moment, the door opens and the owner of the building looks out and says, I am the owner of this building. A house aglow, a shining temple. That has a much different feel to it, doesn't it? But here's the thing. Jeremy first said, so is this a translation thing? Was this because the Talmud we were reading was translated from the Hebrew into Norwegian, into English? And he went, and the rabbi said, no, it's not because it was a translation issue. It's that it can be read either way. It can be read as a building in flames or a building aglow. I shouldn't actually say either way, because it is both a flame and a glow. And it's not glowing because it's on fire. It's both welcoming and terrifying at the same time. Right? Both welcoming and terrifying at the same time. It's a lot like life, isn't it? Life is a both and situation, not an either or one. The same story can be understood in two ways. The same truth understood differently at different times. The glass is both half empty and half full. The story is really about one's heart being in two places at the same time. How many of us in our lives have had that same situation? How many times have you lived not with a dream, but with a dream of a dream? Let me give you an example. A couple of years ago, I was talking to a babysitter for our girls, and she was telling me how she was applying to all these different colleges and universities across the country. And she was imagining what it would be like. Should she go to a school in New England that maybe has a good name? Or maybe she'll go to a school in like someplace down south where it's warm all the time. Or maybe she'll go out to the West Coast. What would her life be like if she got into that track? And she's imagining all these different things. And at the same time, she's got to put up with her parents who are trying to get her to do her chores. And she's got to finish her tests so she can graduate that year to go into college. Right? All of us have stories like that. Some of you may be living them out right now. In fact, I know some of you are. Maybe some of you are in relationships, but you aren't happy. You think maybe there's some potential for that relationship to get better, but do you wait for it to get better? Do you just put up with it? Do you get counseling? Do you run away? Or maybe you've received news that one of your parents is ill, and you don't know if you should be thinking about rehab or planning a funeral service. Or perhaps you live in relative peace right now, but peace is boring. And perhaps you want to live a life that's full of intrigue or at least some chaos. You long for changes. You want both. Or maybe on Friday you watched the inauguration and you got kind of depressed. And then you went to the march yesterday, a march, and you all of a sudden weren't feeling alone anymore. You were jammed. I was there. I was jam-packed. It was shoulder to shoulder. It was amazing. I certainly didn't feel alone. Or maybe your minister of 15 years has announced that he's going to retire. And you are told that it will be a while before the next settled minister arrives. And you wonder what lies ahead. And your loving minister of 15 years announced that he was going to retire a long time ago. And you keep seeing him. And you wonder, how can we miss him if he's never gone? And you think about how much time you've, and energy and money and love you've put into this place. And now your religious leader is leaving. And you start to wonder if it's maybe time for you to check out that church next door, you know, the one with the new sign. Have I got those stories right? Being in that space as individuals and as a religious community, when you're in that space, that in-between space, time seems to stretch out longer and longer because you don't really know what else to do. You hope that by waiting something will change, or that maybe something won't change. It's a protracted time of ambiguous, uncertain, unclear, mysterious things that you may or may not want to happen. It's easy to feel alone in those times, a time when you don't feel grounded, a time when you can feel isolated. And you may even start to wonder, where is God in all of this? Where is God at these times when you are in these two in-between spaces, when you are living with two hearts, when you are of two minds about something? You wonder, where is the sacred? How do we find God, or does God find us? Now, in the Talmudic story, it says the owner of the house looks out and sees him. The man is unable to climb up, so God has to come down to him. When we are unable to find our footing in our times of protracted ambiguity, God finds us and says, I am the owner of this glowing temple. God is there for us, says the Midrash. But as Unitarian Universalists, maybe the idea of God as a landlord isn't really helpful. Maybe the way we experience that divine connection is by having our friends around us, being there with each other and for each other. Life is welcoming, like this church is welcoming. You look around and you see the faces of people who have been your friends for years. People who brought you meals when your child was sick, who coached your son, who taught your daughter. And you love these people, and you welcome them into your home, and they welcome you into theirs. And then you discover that some of these same people whom you loved might have voted differently than you in this past election, and that is terrifying. And it's difficult to figure out how you feel, because in present day white America, our partisan identities have in some way taken on roles of ethnicity, right? But I want to remind you something. Friends are more important than any political identity you may have. Where do they say, though politics touch everything, not everything is politics, not by a long shot. Let me tell you something that I do know, and that is this, that this place is made holy not because of the ministers, not because of who stands here Sunday after Sunday, but it's made holy because of the people who have sat in these pews for hundreds of years, who've given their lives here, who've made their lives here in this place. What does it say in the Christian scriptures from Matthew? Wherever two or three come together in my name, there I am with you. This place is sacred because of you. And the task of whatever minister comes is to call, whoever minister you call, their task is to help you to remember that. This place is sacred because of you. So here we are. We have known where we've been, but we're not sure what our future holds. And that future can be welcoming and terrifying. But remember that you are not alone in facing the future. Religion is the result of what we do with the idea of ultimate wonder. Save the world or savor it. Yes. Please join me in singing our final hymn, number 295. Sing out praises for the journey. 295. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. Our worship is over. Our service begins. Go in peace. Amen.